The following podcast is intended for a mature audience. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome back to Tale of the Manticore. Like the creature from which it takes its name, Tale of the Manticore is a mashup, a crossbreeding between two different species of storytelling. Here you will find the unpredictability of old-school paper and dice games with the storycraft of a dark fantasy novel. No character is sacred and no character will be spared if the dice decide their fate is at hand. The dice determine all. According to lore, the tail of a manticore is barbed with cruel iron spikes. There will be much pain in the days ahead. Last time, on Tale of the Manticore. In Chapter 56, the party pushes further into the silver mine of Thangar on their search for Ursulith. They eventually come to a cavern where a cave-in blocks their path. Also in the room is the aftermath of a terrible battle between 8 dwarves and a worker Ankeg. The beast has been slain, and while one of the dwarves at first seems to have survived, it soon becomes clear that his wounds are beyond even Gyrios' power to heal. With the path ahead blocked, the party is forced to search for an alternate route into the lower mines. In the end, there is only one way. To access the lower mines in time, they will need to use the chain diving well. This is a contraption by which a long chain is fastened to one's ankles, and, as the diver plummets headfirst down the well, a winch allows the chain to safely unspool. Of all the terrors they have faced, in some ways, this trial requires the most courage. With no other choice, the companions master their fear and take the leap. Finally, in a flashback, we learn what has become of poor Ursulith. It is said that some fates are worse than death, and this, I think it is fair to say, qualifies. Chapter 57, Part 1, Day 70, Night. Party status: Harl, 26 of 26 hit points. Gyrios, 33 of 33. Eridine, 18 of 18. Umura, 23 of 23. Spells available. Umura has memorized Charm Person, Levitate, Knock, and Lightning Bolt. Gyrios has prayed for Cure Light Wounds, times 2, Hold Person, and Bless. Gyrios was still shaking, but not just from the chain diving ordeal. Earlier, when he had reached the bottom and released himself from the harness, Eridine had thrown her arms around his neck, and then, standing on her tiptoes, had kissed him hard on the mouth. She had pulled away only after she heard the chain retract and redeploy. When Harl had suddenly appeared in their midst, dangling upside down, the dwarf was not the only one who was red in the face. Gyrios' heart was hammering in his chest. He felt flushed with adrenaline, surprise, and a mixture of emotions he had never felt before. Eridine acted as though nothing had happened between them and set about helping Harl down.
Oh, thank you.
Then the chain was on its way back up again. They waited just long enough to exchange worried looks before the rattle from above sounded, and, just a few seconds later, Umura was dangling above them like a rabbit in a snare.
Oh, get me down! Get me down!
They had to calm her down and get her to stop squirming before they could free her from the ankle straps. She continued cursing at everything and nothing for several minutes after that. Her vocabulary, it turned out, was plentiful. Well, that had all happened some 5 or 10 minutes ago. Presently, they found themselves moving through a new set of tunnels, with Umura's lantern beam lighting the way ahead, and a few choice and colorful epithets still slipping from her lips.
How deep are we now, Harl?
Gyrios didn't really want to know, so he was surprised to hear himself asking.
1,600 feet, maybe more,
replied Harl. He seemed distracted. At each fork they encountered, he seemed less and less sure of which way to go.
Damn it. We could be wandering around down here for hours before we find anything.
They had come to yet another Y junction, with identical tunnels leading off in each new direction.
I don't know. Let's go this way.
Between the Lines. In preparation for the descent into Thangar's mine, I drew a pair of maps, one for the upper section and one for the lower, and included key locations and discoveries on it that the party could potentially make. Although my maps are a simplified abstraction, the actual mine is, essentially, a labyrinth of tunnels that cuts almost 3,000 feet into the mountain's core and contains dozens upon dozens of passages. When Harl suggests that they might spend hours searching in vain, he's not exaggerating. That said, I was never worried about how the party would navigate the upper part. It would be easy enough for Harl to detect and follow the downward slope of the tunnel floors. And, once in the active mine, there would also be a trail of excavating activity along the way. It would be a simple matter to identify the path of greatest recent activity. However, now that they have entered the lower mines, I don't think it will be so easy. The labyrinth is much bigger here, and they aren't just trying to find the bottom, they're looking for Ursulith. In the history of this show, I don't think I've ever needed to randomly determine what the party would do, but in their current situation, I really can't see how any one choice would be better than another, so I am going to roll at random to see which way they go. In the spirit of keeping things simple, I'll say that they either follow the direction that Ursulith actually took, or they do not. 50-50. That's a high-low on a d20. High means they move closer to finding what they seek. A 3. They go the wrong way and miss the waiting evidence of Ursulith's passage that might have been found. Instead, the way they have chosen leads deeper into the mine, towards the very bottom.
Hey there, fine listeners. I'm Ken Brown, Game Master for the Rolling in the Geek podcast. I'm joining you today with an invitation for a place at our table to join Trevor the Cleric and Harkos the Monk as they discover the beauty and dark secrets of Riven, the Shattered Continent. Roll a perception check, subscribe to our website at ritgeekpodcast.com, and give us a listen on Apple Podcasts or whatever your preferred listening platform is. Thanks, and keep your eyes peeled for dragons.
Dramatis Personae. Eridine. The first person who ever kissed Eridine was a man 40 years her senior. He was the owner of the Cracked Cask, a tavern she had briefly worked at when she was 17 years old and living in Rayford. He had been a pig of a man, a pig, from his fat, hairy belly that stuck out from under his sweat-stained shirt to his upturned nose. She could still remember how his breath reeked of onions and ale. The worst part was that he had not forced himself on her. She had permitted him to do it, and had always hated herself a little for that, even though it had only happened the once and hadn't gone any further. He had shown her kindness when nobody else had by taking her in and giving her a job. She had felt that somehow she owed him something back. The second person who kissed her was a boy her own age. He had sand-colored hair, freckles, and blue eyes. He made weekly deliveries to the tavern and would persuade Eridine to sneak off into the storage room, ostensibly to help him catalog the contents of his cart. If the owner had caught them, he would have given her a thrashing, and this made the encounters with the boy exciting, at least at first. After a while, she admitted to herself that the thrill only came from the risk of being caught, and so eventually she brought an end to their trysts. The third person to kiss Eridine was Matchy Swin, who had swept her off her feet and then away with him to join his gang. She had been head over heels for him, completely infatuated, and she had allowed him everything. The truth was that, until today, Eridine had never actually kissed a man. She had only allowed them to kiss her. She had never really thought about it before, but the difference between the two was significant. To her, relations with men had always ever felt as though they took and she gave, Not to say that she had always minded that, but today, at the bottom of the chain diving well, when she saw Gyrios appear from the darkness above and her heart had resumed beating and her lungs had started breathing again, that was when she had decided to follow the command of her heart and for once be the person who did the kissing. It had been worth it, if for nothing else, the look on Gyrios' face when she had pulled away. While it may seem that Gyrios is the one gaining experience today, actually, it is Harl we need to discuss, because today is a level-up episode for the young chief. In case you haven't been keeping track, lately I've been rolling with dice on fire. I really can't believe how lucky I've been with level-ups, so this time, I have the creeping suspicion that the dice gods are about to right the ship. Yeah, let's just say that my expectations are low for this one. Still, you never know what's gonna happen. Let's get some dice. Now that Harl has reached level 5, he'll get a d8 of new hit points and the chance to improve his stats. His saving throws and to hit rolls will stay the same. Here's the d8 for new hit points. I don't believe it. I got an 8. I honestly thought my luck had run dry, but there it is. It almost feels too good. With rolls like these, people are going to start thinking I'm making up numbers. Let's see what happens with stat bonus rolls. A 6 on a d6 indicates a +1 bonus to the stat in question. Strength. A 3, no change there. Intelligence. A 4. Wisdom. I've got a 1. Dexterity. It'd be nice to eventually eliminate his penalty in this stat. Let's see. No, a 5. Constitution. A 6. That takes Harl from a 10 to an 11. No bonuses for that, but I'm not complaining. Charisma. A 4. All in all, that was yet another crazy good level up, but I think Harl's gonna need those hit points. There are some tough fights coming up in the very near future. Chapter 57, Part 2. Day 70. Night. Party status. The party status is unchanged, with the exception of Harl, who goes from 26 hit points to 34. This deep underground, the air had a different quality. It was thinner, cooler too. Gyrios was pretty sure that wasn't the reason he was still shaking, nor was it responsible for his thumping heart. Unlike Aridin, he had never been kissed by anyone before. Speaking of the pretty rogue, presently she lifted up a hand signaling everyone to stop. She pointed to her ear, indicating her desire to listen in silence. Aridin cocked her head to the side and then pointed down a tributary tunnel.
People,
she whispered.
Good,
replied Harl.
I was starting to fear the worst.
They increased their speed as they made their way down the passage Aridin indicated. It was too narrow to walk two abreast, and so they went single file. Harl was first, then Aridin, Umura with her lantern held high, and Gyrios last. After 100 feet, they could all hear the sound of voices, speaking in whispers. Aridine's hearing truly was incredible to have heard it from so far away. She couldn't make out the words, but Harl and Umura knew the Dwarvish language when they heard it. If they had not been announced by their light, they might have been met with a volley of crossbow bolts when they reached the large cavern, but the Dwarven warriors there had been praying for the arrival of some allies, and when they saw the bouncing glow cast by Umura's lantern, they hailed the party happily.
Bin Gruenmog, your Noka father.
Yo Morgenta Hukog,
Harl called back.
Humans, too?
Came the voice again, this time in the common tongue. Harl didn't need to answer, because that was the moment his party stepped into view. They were at the mouth of a large cavern that split off from the main tunnel. The space was oblong and asymmetrical, roughly 80 feet across and twice that in length. It was bisected at the halfway point by a breastwork of supply crates and piled rocks. At least a dozen top halves of dwarven faces were visible, peeking over the top, as did a glint of steel from several crossbows that were already being pulled away so they did not threaten the party. A dwarf with a dented half-helm and a squared-off beard of fiery orange clambered over the shortest crate and moved to meet Harl near the cave entrance.
Where are the others?
He wanted to know.
There are none,
returned Harl simply.
The last group Burl did.
But you are so few, it won't be enough.
Actually, we didn't come here under orders. We're looking for a missing girl. Ursulith Stonecarver. Is she here with you?
What's that? A girl? No, we haven't seen any girl down here. But is no one else coming then?
I'm afraid not.
I see.
As he spoke these words, the orange-bearded dwarf seemed to notice Harl's unique armor for the first time. Then he regarded Gyrios, Eridine, and especially Umura. Suddenly, he bowed deeply at the waist and introduced himself, formally.
I am called Terig Slinghitch. I'm the captain of this team. Ringlock sent us in almost 2 weeks ago, 3 days after Augustone himself led the first mission. For most of that time, we've been stuck down here. Come, let us go behind the fortifications. We're exposed on this side. I will tell you all I know, and you can tell me everything you have seen and heard.
As it turned out, it was Harl who shared what he knew first. It didn't take long. He described how quiet and still Thangar had become. He spoke of their encounter with the two hunter Ankeg in the collapsed tunnel where they had found the final group of reinforcements. Harl had never learned the name Nog Shattershield, but, nonetheless, tried to report the uncomfortable details of what had befallen him without judgment.
Did he happen to mention if they knew we were still inside when they collapsed the tunnel?
They must have thought you were all dead,
was all Harl could think to say. Replied Terig.
Perhaps. Well, I'll wager there's a dozen dead on this side of the cave-in if there's, what did you say, 8 dead on the other?
Harl's face took on a glum expression, and he shrugged.
It's most ironical. By coming here and bringing down that chain, perhaps you've saved us after all. Getting back to the surface will take time, but the chain diving station will be faster than digging our way through the collapse.
That's if there's anyone alive to go back, Sling Hitch,
said a new voice. Looking past Terry's shoulder, Harl recognized the scarred face of Garrett Magger. Garrett, he knew, was the owner of the Dead Troll Tavern. The grim-looking dwarf was past his prime, to be sure, but he still looked plenty tough. A scowl, unhidden by his stringy and dun-colored beard, accentuated the creases of his face. He had beady black eyes and carried a crescent-bladed battle axe not unlike Harl's own.
We ain't going back till they're all dead.
A couple of other stony-faced dwarves, clearly eavesdropping on the conversation, nodded in agreement.
With the utmost respect to Chief Stonecarver and his party,
replied Terig,
I'm not confident that an extra 4 will be enough.
These aren't just any 4,
Garrett pointed out.
Have you not seen the young chief's armor? These 4 put down 2 Hunter Ankeg and look, not a scratch on them. Besides, it has to be enough. You heard him. Ringlock hasn't got any more to send and there aren't any more coming. If we don't do this, we might as well pack our things and leave Thangar when we get back.
Terig Slinghitch was speechless for a moment, his mouth actually opening and closing without a word. Then he looked Garrett right in the eye and nodded.
You're right, Magar,
he said. Then turning to Harl,
would you help us, Chief Stonecarver?
We aren't going back to the surface until we find Ursulith,
Harl said matter-of-factly.
And you all wish to do it then?
Now Terig was addressing his fellow dwarven warriors.
Face death head on,
spat Garrett. A little cheer erupted from the others. And so it was decided. They would leave their defenses and kill every last Ankeg, or they would die trying. Now they were 24 strong. Harl surveyed his war band moving through the tunnels and felt a sudden surge of pride. At the front, with Gyrios, Umura, and Eridine, were Terig and Garrett. Next in line were thick-armed Will Hallam and Puck, with his great helm and silver-headed warhammer. Then the two crossbow archers, Migi and Tidari, who were always together, side by side. Behind them came Debin Helmbreaker and Tam Wheelgrinder with their broadswords, and still others marched behind them. 2 dozen strong. Harl hoped it would be enough. That hope melted away when they entered the lowest caverns of the mines and saw what had become of Augerstone's party. Harl had been warned about what he would see there, but hearing of a thing and witnessing it are not the same. The bottommost excavation site in Thangar's mine was an enormous cavern where two awful battles had taken place just a few days apart, 2 weeks ago. As a result, it was now more like a charnel house than a mining site. The hulking bodies of six worker ankegs crowded the floor of the cavern alone and piled atop each other in heaps. Their chitinous armor was cracked, broken, and even sheared off in places. Unlike the hunters, these monsters had not curled up upon their deaths, but had fallen flat, with their spindly legs splayed out or crushed under their own bodies. The ankegs were only a part of the carnage, however. Butchered pieces of dwarves, many still firmly stuck in pieces of armor, were scattered everywhere. There were gauntlets with hands still inside, and great helms that showed a ring of flesh and a stump of spinal cord at the bottom. There were leather boots still occupied by their owner's feet. Worse, the larger pieces of these dwarves were nowhere to be seen. It was clear that the legs and torsos had been hauled away, presumably to be eaten by the surviving ankegs. If the crumpled insects and the dwarven body parts were not enough, there was the blood. Dried blood was everywhere. There was so much of it that it covered more of the floor than not. It reached up on the walls in big looping arches. It even painted lines across the cavern ceiling. Some of the victims must have been lifted into the air, caught in these giant's mandibles, before being sliced in half.
Grunmog, help us,
muttered Harl.
I hope he will,
replied Tarik.
This time.
Augerstone's original party, Tarik had told him earlier, had been 30 of Thangar's best. Tarik could not explain how things had turned and their efforts had failed so completely. He had lost 10 of his own, right here in this cavern, before ordering the retreat. They had built their defenses and waited for reinforcements, but quickly found themselves pinned down, unable to leave for fear of being attacked while spread thin in a tunnel. Every so often an ankeg had come. It was almost as though the insects were testing them. A few volleys from their crossbows had driven them off, but by the time Harl and his party had arrived, the dwarves had started to run out of ammunition. Food, too. Their mine rations were almost depleted. The cavern was not going to do their morale any good, and so Harl and Tarik hurried their company across it, spending as little time as necessary. But it was impossible not to notice the dismembered body parts, impossible not to imagine that it could be themselves, lying in pieces on the stony floor before long. Eridine especially found herself wishing to be elsewhere. Whatever smugness she had felt over having made Gyrios' heart skip a beat was gone, replaced by a heavy sense of dread, and there was something else that was bothering her, though it took a moment to place it. Under the smell of death in the room was another that was strangely familiar. She quickly placed it. It was the scent of the artificial atmosphere they had breathed while in Grithwip's secret workshop days before. Gods, she thought. They must be well over 2,000 feet below the surface by now. The 24 of their party made their way across the cavern in silence and without incident to the far side. This was the spot where the ankegs had breached their mines. That was plain to see, for a few feet off the ground was a round hole, scored and notched in 100 places. It opened into a tube-like tunnel that twisted away into darkness. Looking at the scoring, it was hard not to think about how strong the ankegs' mandibles must be. A few of the dwarves muttered prayers to Grunmog, and then they began to organize into single file before climbing inside one by one. This time, Tarik led the way, holding Umura's lantern in his left hand. Garrett went after him with Wilhallam and Puck, then Harl and the humans. The remainder of the warband brought up the rear. The ankeg's tunnel twisted haphazardly. In some places, the feeling of claustrophobia became almost unbearable, especially in those stretches where the tube pinched and constricted so that even the dwarves could not stand straight and the humans were forced to crawl on their hands and knees. Even though they knew they were moving steadily towards danger, it was a relief when they reached the end of the tube and dropped down onto the floor of another cavern. This space was similar to the last in that it mostly contained the dead. The missing dwarven torsos, legs, and heads from the previous chamber were here, lying in piles, along with other fully intact dwarven corpses. There were no dead ankeg, but
But the bodies of Thangar soldiers were not all that the room contained. The place was filled with mushrooms. They sprouted from rock and flesh alike. Large violet-colored fungi with pinkish undercaps and spots. No, not spots, but puckered rings that resembled little kissing mouths. It might have been a trick of the light, but they seemed to throb ever so slightly. Girios, Umura, and several of the dwarven war party were bent over double, retching at both the sight and the smell. Harl brought up a hand to cover his nose.
This must be where they store their food,
he said.
And the mushrooms could be part of their diet.
For the love of gold,
sighed Taric.
Look there.
He pointed beyond some heaped bodies and brought up the lantern so they could see. At first, they saw the unmistakable glint of silver. It was from a suit of beautifully made armor, full plate, trimmed in silver and gold. The full helm was shaped to resemble the head of a bear.
Chief Augurstone! Oh no!
Exclaimed Garrett.
This is a terrible sight to behold,
said Harl.
We'll have our revenge. You can be sure of that,
flared Garrett, with pain in his voice.
And so let's get on with it. Where's the next tunnel? My axe is thirsty.
Tarig held forth Umur's lantern again. On the far side of the cavern, its beam fell across a bare wall. Tarig frowned and panned the light left and right, but there was nothing to see but the smooth rock, the dead, and patches of purple fungi.
Try shining it up a little,
suggested Garrett. Tarig complied, and the spot of illumination climbed the wall, eventually revealing an opening some 40 feet up.
How on Marith are we going to get all the way up there?
Asked the captain, mostly to himself.
Eridine.
Harl unshouldered his rope and passed it to the rogue.
Do you think you can manage it?
Accepting the coil of rope, Eridine looked at the opening, then at the expanse of rock beneath it. She licked her lips once and nodded. She'd only taken a few steps towards the far side of the cavern when the mushrooms closest to her began to twitch. The twitching seemed contagious, and it moved in a wave around the cavern until all the fungi were quivering. Then, without warning, as one, they opened their little puckered rings and blew out an ear-piercing shriek. Thanks for listening to Tale of the Manticore. If you like what you've heard and want to support the show, there are now several ways to do so. You can recommend the show online or to friends. You can like and retweet episode announcements on Twitter. I have a new rules ultralight RPG called One Shot in the Dark that you can buy for the price of a cup of coffee on DriveThruRPG. And finally, you can rate or review the show on your podcatcher of choice. Thanks to everyone who has done any of the above. I'd like to read a review from iTunes today. This one was posted by Asako So. Asako writes, one of my favorite podcasts, immersive and dramatic, 5 stars. Love the show, thanks for your excellent work. Really inspires me in my enthusiasm for gaming. Thanks, Asako. To be numbered among your favorite podcasts is a huge honor for me. I hope I can continue to earn a spot on your podcatcher. The longer I do the show, the more I realize that I really want Tale of the Manticore to be the best it can possibly be. Speaking of the best, I'd like to thank this episode's voice actors. I've got 2 new characters and 2 new actors to introduce today. Captain Tarig Slinghitch is voiced by Steve Morrison. Steve has a great podcast that you really need to check out if you enjoy solo RPGs. His show is called Errant Adventures, and it is very, very good stuff. I'm also excited to welcome Hodag RPG to the show. Hodag RPG gives voice and loads of personality to Garrett Magger, who runs the Dead Troll Tavern when he isn't fighting Ankegs down mineshafts. If you go to hodagrpg.itch.io, you can check out loads of great art and other goodies. Highly recommended. My thanks to both of these great new talents. For listeners who'd like to get in touch, you can contact me on Twitter at ManticoreTale or on Instagram at TaleOfTheManticorePodcast. My email is taleofthemanticore@gmail.com. I also keep a blog at taleofthemanticore.blogspot.com where I post art, character sheets, maps, and other bits and pieces. The story will continue on the next episode of Tale of the Manticore, the story where chaos rules.
We're going to give it another go. It's a bit more zing. Oh, a bit of zing.
A bit of zing.
Yeah. Ready? Hello.
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 Wait till I get through the whole thing. Ready? Hello with a billowing hilltop.
Hello.
Oh, dear. Waiting to get through the whole thing.
No, I mean...
I thought that was the whole thing.
The whole thing is, hello, we're the Billowing Hilltop. Okay. That's the whole thing.
Yeah? Okay. That was right.
That pretty much sums up the show. But if you want to find out any more, you can visit us at www.billowinghilltop.com. Is it com? Does anybody know?
.org.
Is it?
It's .com.
What do we do? What do we play?
There's monsters.
Does anybody remember?
Walking around.
We don't know. And
yeah.
And we will be delighted if you're to join us around our table as we play Dungeon. Is it 5th edition? Hello?
Yeah, we think so. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. We play Dungeons & Dragons.
Sorry, that was me.
What was that noise in the background? There will be noises in the background as we play Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition through the classic Paizo adventure path, The Age of Worms. You can expect this.
No!
Quite a bit of this.
I'm completely lost.
This.
Bleh.
This.
I've got a bugbear in my underpants.
And one of these.
Oh dear.
We're on Apple Podcasts and we're on Spotify and we're on TuneIn and you can find us on Twitter and you can find us on Facebook. And we hope you join us. Thanks very much.